Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, and I'll be your host for this half hour on Heritage Radio Network. And today, we're sponsored by The Barter House. The Barter House is a proud supporter of Heritage Radio Network. The Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. To learn more about Barter House, please visit them on the web at thebarterhouse.com. Today, I took advantage of a special PR opportunity and invited as my guests Trevor Gulliver and Fergus Henderson. Trevor Gulliver and Fergus Henderson opened St. John Restaurant in Smithfield in London. And for those of you who don't know St. John Restaurant, I can't imagine you don't, what you do know is that Fergus Henderson is the man behind the so-called kind of cult movement of nose-to-tail cooking, or cooking of the whole beast. Now, what happened this morning, they're here to make a major announcement. Welcome, Trevor. I'm glad you're here.
Good day.
Fergus could not make it because he's in the kitchen.
As we say, lunch comes first, and there was a, he's in the kitchen now.
Well, he's cooking with Jonathan Waxman at Barbudo Restaurant in Manhattan. So if you are in, if you are in New York City and happen to be around Jane Street in Washington, you can poke your nose in and peek around the corner at Barbudo. It's all open, and maybe capture a glimpse of Fergus standing back there. But we're so sorry he can't be with us, but we're thrilled that you're here, Trevor, because you and Fergus have been together for quite some time doing this restaurant project, right? Since 1993?
Yeah, 93, opened in 94.
And when you first opened St. John Restaurant, did Fergus know at that time, was he already into the whole beast, the nose-to-tail cooking thing?
Well, excuse me answering on Fergus's behalf, but as he would say, you know, he has a common sense, and we have a common sense approach to what we do. And that old quote about when he said, well, if you knock the animal on the head, it only seems to be common sense and politeness to eat it all.
Yes. That's everyone says, well, he's, you know, nose-to-tail sums up his ethic of cooking. But I think he would also say, as you just said, common sense and authenticity and politeness to the animal.
I would say it kind of differently because he's my chum and I can say a bit more than his modesty. But, to do the simple things is very difficult. So there is, you know, all those days years ago. It's funny being here, and I think in Smithfield at sort of about 7-8 o'clock at night, particularly in the winter, they turned all the street lighting down by about 75%. So it was kind of, and maybe in those days we were finding ourselves we were a lot rougher than when we started. if that's right. But we met because I just we did this thing called the fire station with another chum, and then someone offered us money for it. Sounds terrible, Mammon. And then our olive oil man said, you should meet Fergus at the French House. So through lunch and dinner, then
he and his wife were cooking at the French House at that time, right?
Yeah, and then we looked at the building, and it was kind of a rough area. And in a way, as Smithfield has changed, maybe we've changed. We've got some problems with the building sorted out after all these years. But what remains the same is the fact that it's common sense. It's the stuff about seasonal and the hip things you read about, or the popular, depends around the world in terms of the words, seasonal. And we go, well, why wouldn't it be seasonal?
Exactly.
Local. Well, only when it can be local and it's good. There's not a lot of olive oil in the UK. so it's that. It's all those things which to us seem obvious. It seems obvious to bake a bread in the morning. It seems obvious to us then that, you know, the food that was provided by what was becoming the world food industry was not. And we always like lunch. Yeah. We're only doing what we actually enjoyed. So.
Well, just to give a little background to our listeners, if they're not familiar with the Smithfield area, that Smithfield is home in London, is home to the oldest and longest running meat market, right?
Oh, yeah.
About 800 years?
Oh, yeah. In fact, even longer, they'll tell you.
Really? So that's their meatpacking district. So.
And you love the idea that the hospital, St. Bart's, very famous hospital, I think opened, I don't know, some would say 600 AD, but it was definitely opened by 900 AD. And of course, it's a bit like barbers and butchers and surgeons, the link. So, of course, you might have the hospital next to where they're chopping their arms off by mistake.
Right. But I mean, I know even when I was there, about 5 years ago to eat at the restaurant, it was at night, it's pretty dark and pretty empty, or it was then. It's probably become more chic now. I don't know. But
And there is now a significant number of restaurants and stuff, which is great. You know, I mean, there is a bit of a worry that why on earth should food and service industries become the new street culture? But then again, a good restaurant represents the street outside its door, so it probably is a good thing.
That's true. Well, you see it in areas of Manhattan, of course, all the time as well. Yeah. Meatpacking District and
those Brits turn up and do Soho House, don't they?
There you go. actually, we were talking about authenticity and what seems natural. The nose-to-tail cooking moniker, of course, came, I don't know, before or after, but nose-to-tail eating, actually. When Fergus published the book, The Whole Beast, Nose to Tail Eating, in 99?
Yeah, the original version was 99.
And the original version was actually Nose to Tail Eating, a British way of cooking, right?
Yeah, it was. We apparently, the powers that be in publishing in this part of the world thought it would be a bit too tough, that kind of, so it got changed to The Whole Beast.
Well, what happened when it was published is that it indeed set off a movement. I mean, why? Chefs around the world literally flocked to that way of cooking, of using every part of the... Not that a lot of chefs didn't anyway, but even more so decided to ascribe to this type of thrift, if you will. Yeah, I mean, using every part of the animal and discovering new ways and new cuts.
There's a thing about cooking. I was talking to someone recently. It can be... when food changed in London... and it was sort of driven by hotels and hotel chefs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you wouldn't get people from outside that discipline. And it was food and beverage and kind of like not, it was a trade. It was not, came, didn't often come with a lot of respect. And you had kind of people from all different kinds of things, may have made their money in rock and roll or, you know, hopefully not in Lehman Brothers, but you had different people and different, and women too. And all of a sudden we kind of realized that we're all making the same music. And we're doing it in odd buildings, not classically trained. So a lot of those people, and you know, now we have the media of food that is everywhere.
That's right. Well, then that's interesting too, because Fergus was not classically trained. He was not. He's not really a trained chef. He's self-taught or inspired by his mother, which I love to hear. Yeah. Inspired by his mother, and a little bit about St. John when you first opened. It was an old smokehouse.
Yeah, it last smoked in 1967. It was an adjunct to the market. Uh-huh. And in fact, we had five smoking towers and one separate, which was gammon, which is a different cure. Do you remember the days of pineapple and gammon? Remember that kind of dish you used to get all around the world?
Oh, no, I'll take your word for it.
I've had it here years ago.
Okay.
I just drove past Peter Luger's. I was the driver. The last time I went there was 30 years ago. I'm only 35.
Yes, actually. Right. There you go. You have to qualify it. Well, just as the dishes, I mean, what's interesting is it's dishes at St. John arrive with very little embellishment. I mean, this food really speaks for itself, which is another type of movement.
Don't do sauces.
Yes, except that. Well, except what it's perhaps nestled in the vegetables and the reduction and of the piece of meat that you're eating. What I was interested in, and I just talked to somebody the other day who said from the James Beard Awards, said, "Well, we just ate at lunch at St. John, and I didn't eat as much pork as I expected I would." When I was there, I didn't eat even as much meat as I thought I would. What was interesting is I was so thrilled, and this is, five, 6 years ago, I ate parts of plants that I've never eaten before. Brussels sprouts leaves, the leaves of the Brussels sprout plant. Well, now you can find it on menus
Hang on, now you can actually pay money for it.
That's right.
We used to scavenge it from the markets.
But that's what I thought was interesting. It was the whole, Fergus's whole philosophy, that it was the whole part of the animal, the whole part of the plant.
Yeah, it's quite strange. We do quite a good meat green salad, you know, and we do cook fish, and we have vegetarian customers because they get decent vegetables.
She said, I had crab. She said,
a lot of these things, and langoustines tend to be on every day.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should blame our dear friend Tony Bourdain for his use of the word zeitgeist and stuff.
I mean, he and Anthony Bourdain being a great PR person for Fergus.
Yeah.
I mean, he called...
We love you, Tony.
Nose to tail, a new chef's Bible. Yeah. I mean, and perhaps it had to do with the pig on the cover, you know. And then people said, I guess that means all the parts of the pig. Well, which indeed are are used.
Well, it's a bit like a sign outside a shop. It's quite handy if it tells you what's inside.
That's right.
Because people react to a visual stimulus.
And, of course, there are recipes for crispy pig's tails and ears and
a lovely
snouts.
Dish.
And,
see, children, you know this thing about crispy, you give them crispy pig tails and they got the crunch on the outside and they're kind of, kind of scrummy gelatinous in the middle. So you can see kids going, that's really quite good.
The only thing that kind of turns me off is that you have to use a Bic razor to shave it before you cook it. that would get to me. Well, it's interesting because every part of the animal, as Fergus, I think the quote was attributed to Fergus. It could have been yours. I don't know.
No, it'd be Fergus.
and he said that nearly every part of every animal we eat is a delicious treat waiting for the hands of a patient cook to prepare it. Well, and this pretty much sums up him and his patients. I mean, because it does take a long time to cook some of these parts. I mean, you know, you really have to bring out the tenderness and the flavor. Right?
There's that answer. I mean, I come from sort of a generation where there'd be a Dutch oven. It's probably the same piece of and casseroles. Mm-hmm. I remember my mother would cook, and it would be left in the oven. And you'd cut it up and come. If you came home from school, that was your dinner. So that kind of the idea. It's like we've lost skills that we had. It's just like we've forgotten.
Well, the same thing.
We've been looking over the wrong fence.
Exactly, and the same thing with the nose to tail. I mean, it's almost a back to the farm movement. Yeah. Because if you grew up on a farm, you did not waste any part of any animal you butchered. I mean,
it's the same thing in if you take Central Europe. The value in that pig that was such a fantastic animal in terms of the things it ate, and you know, once the snows came, if you're up in the Alps. That valley shut down, and the pig you slaughtered, you would see you through.
That's right. The fat also, included, and save the fat.
it's also the reason there's things like fondue, and they put bread in and cheese, because they don't waste
anything else.
I've never been sure about fondue.
I've never lived in the mountains. Stale bread and rinds of cheese, right?
That's right, yeah.
What was the initial public reaction? Well, you say you were a little rougher in the nose to tail concept sort of developed after the restaurant opened, or
it was
from the get go.
Fergus is, you know, he has a pretty clear vision, and we don't like, and same with myself, we don't like artifice. We don't like decoration.
Mm-hmm.
We like to go and meet the man that makes the wine. If we like his wine, buy it. It's nothing, and it's ideas, so everything to do with commercialism, but it's actually, you know, you want to eat what you want to eat, and in a way we're very lucky we do what we do, and there's enough people, and in a way I should say you just had to have rigor. When we started, you just have broad shoulders, and eventually, if it takes, I would say, 5-6 years to create a good restaurant, at least, because we have people that only come once a year.
And is that, well, especially,
and that's
why especially if you live
along.
Stateside, and, you can only come.
Yeah, but they come because of what we do. They don't come because we have an international menu.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come. And now they come because so many of them are old friends. They come in with a smile on their face. We love them because without them we don't exist.
Repeat business.
It's a love thing. But so it is quite true. And then that becomes a restaurant that does what it says it does. And you know, to me, it's instant, add water, and it'll turn out, it'll be an Italian restaurant. So what are we doing today? What mall are we in? You know what I mean? Or somebody has an idea, I've always wanted to cook French. Well, that's it's an idea.
Right.
But in terms of, you know, a philosophy that is careful, it doesn't sound too grand. But, you know, there is an element of stubbornness. You know, and if at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be tough for the first few years, it should be tough. You know, and it is, you know, we do what we do.
Well, and that even holds true to the building itself and the decor of the restaurant. Fergus has a background training in architecture, and you go into the restaurant, and I wasn't really quite sure. I'd seen pictures, I'd read, PR accounts of it and all about publicity about it, but I was quite stunned when I walked in. It's architecturally, it's gorgeous, but it's very plain. It's kind of like being in a white, clean butcher shop with
I can give
no
you or a refectory or someone said an abattoir.
It is very it lets the walls speak for themselves
it's funny, it's again that kind of thing where in a way if you careful what I say about all our friends are designers and architects if you have to get someone in to do to translate or come up with ideas, in a way you've kind of thought through what you want, and it's a bit like, you know, the hotel project or doing bread and wine, which took us 9 years after the first St. John.
Now, Bread and Wine is where you've moved the bakery not far away, actually, in Spitalfields, right?
But that was we moved the bakery there, and people sort of walked in. We could have had it sort of dark. It'd be like a tea shop, and we like the idea you can buy your bread on the way home and maybe have a glass of wine.
Yes,
that's a very civilized way about going.
Right,
and then people came and used it as a restaurant. So that's what it's become, and it struggles to produce all the bread now. But you know, it was a building, and it's funny about where people start. The trigger for doing something for us isn't we should open another one, or we are a brand. God, we hate that word. Mm. Although that pig logo and all that. Yeah, I know, I understand that. Thank you.
yes,
we need customers too.
right. Uh-huh. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right?
exactly. But it's a slight digression, but you know, we have a chopping block, butcher's block, and we take wherever we can the whole animal in.
Mm-hmm.
And through the discussions will be what we're doing, whether that goes into brine, whether... You know, and then but the guys and the girls that are working there are learning all those skills, which is so hard to do. So in terms of the building and how that was done, and it made sense to us, common sense again, don't want to decorate it. We're not going to put a set of oars on it and call it Rolocks or something, and it wasn't, you know, distressed, stonewashed or anything else. We just loved the space. The space speaks for itself because the whole big high ceilings. Finding the configuration in that weird building was very difficult. Now it looks like it, well, it's just perfectly done.
Exactly,
like it, you know, but,
and it's called St. John because of the road it's on St. John.
It's that thing about when we did this thing, the fire station years ago, and someone said, why do you call it the fire station? Because I said, because it's the fire station. And people know where it is. And the idea of, you know, even the naming of a restaurant, it tells you something.
Yeah. And okay, again, well, which brings me to your reason for being stateside.
Not that we do press then. Oops, no.
And we got to get a little PR in here. As you say, you don't like to use PR agents and companies, and you like to do it all yourself. Still part of the authenticity.
Well, that's a philosophical thing,
mm-hmm.
because all you'll get is the flannel and the pump and the press releases that my chums in the media say, do you know me? I had last week. You know, the things that grow slowly, as opposed to instant add water and there it is. You know, what's that building? It happens in Manhattan all the time. What's that building? Oh, Trevor, it's now going to be that. Oh, crikey, but it was only that last week. Yeah. So,
well, how long did it take? What was the initial public reaction to St. John when it first opened?
We got that. I think we know every single pun, whether it's awfully good or...
Oh, awful, because they've all the awful served.
It was people were very kind to start with, and it gradually... Because, again, it was, you know... food, it's the same as New York, you know. 16 years ago, the world was a different place. You know, we'd been in Melbourne again and just watching that through the years where we've done the festival and stuff. And we met David Kinch the first time from Man Razor. You think, what lovely things. And there's the Beacon of Alice out there just keeping it going. And now John, but and there's all these people that have come from different things. So it's kind of, what's the word? It's changed.
Evolved.
But they've gone to do what they wanted to do. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me.
If you use PR, you're buying yourself into it's false. You're only reading what it says, and then you see a trade magazine.
I mean, if it puts butts in the seats, as they say, it helps, you know. But as far as stating your philosophy of your purpose, no. Who better to state that than yourself?
But a discovered thing is, I guess it's a bit like where we're sitting today, a discovered thing becomes something that people take ownership of. Or feel an not an allegiance, but it is something they want. Whereas something that is contrived or pressed, or it's a bit like as advertised on TV. Well, I'm not buying that then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also it means that the money spent is not spent in the right way because it's a tough opening of a hotel.
Or there's so much hype about a place that people have distorted expectations or grand expectations rather than just. Going and making an opinion for themselves and tasting.
Well, spin it back into one of the reasons we're here.
Yes,
it's a bit like it kind of worries us about the.
Well,
the
first
hotel
of all,
project.
Wait,
oh yeah,
all,
that we haven't mentioned it.
Ta-da! We have a new announcement, and that is announcement of a new project. So you've got a new restaurant and a hotel, a small hotel.
Yeah. Yes, we're kind of a restaurant with rooms. They're kind of like a
restaurant with
idea
rooms.
of a hostelry where you know you can sort of
overeat, overdrink, and pass out in the room.
Well, we didn't necessarily, but relax after. We sort of condensed it down to because Fergus is the true modernist, I'm just a modernist. But we've now got it down to Urban Hut meets Mini Grand. So you could begin to understand where we're going with this. And Manzi's was a... We didn't know. I was talking to an agent about, oh, what are you up to, Trevor? Because, oh, well, you know... Well, Manzi's said... And we wouldn't go and open a restaurant in a block of... There's a street, and there's a restaurant for sale. Okay, let's put a St. John in that. We're a trigger somewhere.
Yeah.
And we both, you know, I first met my father-in-law in Manzi's. You know, it's where the various card games used to go take place upstairs. There was an extra room on the first floor of bedrooms, and that's because they weren't looking out the window, the people that used that room. So it's got, and Fergus's father used to take him there, and old man Manzi took the money and is now living in Monte Carlo. And the guy, the agent, saying, but Trevor, you know about it? I said, yeah. I said, but we know about it. He said, it's a hotel. You've forgotten, haven't you? And Fergus, well, there's a story about Beirut. We really want to do this project in Beirut. Beirut's fantastic food culture. You know about women's place and burning of bras and all that stuff, post-war and everything else. You know, we have very good friends. One, she's fluent in French, English, and Arabic. She cooks for the family. She has a career. And you think, and you sit, and we all sit around a table, and we eat, and these are things that punctuate the day. And in a way, you kind of lost it. So you can imagine us, they had this opportunity, and Ferguson had been to a wedding there, and then someone mentioned, and we suddenly thought, and then we went, and we enjoyed it so much. And then the troubles became so serious. And I actually said, where is the hole? And he said, you're standing next to it. And that's where they blew up Hariri.
Oh,
it was so big, I didn't... And in the end, which is so the seed was there. There was a seed, the seed about the hotel. And then I looked down the other end. We have this desk that he sits one end, I sit the other end. And I look, and it's a hotel. And so, you know, one thing leads to another.
So you went back and chose that original space. Now, it's so what is the name of the new restaurant? It's about to open. Has it opened?
It's going to open in September. Can I just hit something?
Yes, do.
Okay. we've had to gut it. I don't think there's any more asbestos in it or special permits and everything else it takes. It's smack bang in the middle of town. Leicester Square is down to our south. We're in Chinatown. There's Shaftesbury Avenue, Theatre Land. We've got four or five theatres.
It's right on Leicester Road.
I could throw a cricket ball into the foyer. But it was always the back street with you call them dumpster trucks and the needles and the urine in the morning and the mess and a car park. So we've kind of done it again. And all the places in the center.
So you're going to gentrify a neighborhood and clean it up, right? It'll become shishi.
And then bugger off. No, we'll not say that. But again, it's because, you know, then you can see our minds sort of, that would be quite cool to do that. We quite enjoy it because it must be fun. You know, and as St. John has grown, some of our people have gone to open their own restaurants. They're working elsewhere. But also, you know, 16-year-olds, there's a guy that starts at 19, he's in his 30s, he's married with kids. And I go, come on, you two. They threw us up another flight of stairs in the office, because get out of the way. So there's lots of little things, and it's an opportunity.
Keep the interest alive.
Yeah, well, not only that, it's just, it's always circumstance, and I think we're going to have fun at it. And
so what's it called?
Oh, yeah, sorry. This is very simple. You could guess this. How about the St. John Hotel?
That's pretty good. Right?
St. John Bread and Wine sells bread and wine. That's where it originally was called.
Don't lose it. See, now that's PR. It worked for you in the beginning. You're going to keep it working for you.
Oh, God, brand. Three, that's a brand.
Well, I'm now from here, you go from New York and making your announcement at Barbuda with Jonathan Waxman, who was himself an alumni of... Shea Panisse
indeed.
And the Alice Water Movement. Indeed. And then you take off next week to, in fact, the Bay Area, and you're going to cook with Chris Cosentino at Il Canto and Shea Panisse.
And Shea Panisse. And our friend Mary Sue Milliken is going to do, a masterclass as well on the Saturday. Do you know, I can't say that word.
Sweetad.
Cuidad. No, you're never going to get it, Trevor.
Cuidad. Yes, Mary Sue, that's wonderful. So this all this to announce the St. John Hotel on Leicester Road? Leicester Street.
Should I not do some kind of on Leicester Street? On Leicester Street. Book early to avoid disappointment.
That's okay. I never understood the E2s and the W's. I just look on the map and I find them. Well, Trevor, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. And we did miss Fergus, but you being the seasoned restaurateur, him being the guy who wanted to cook the innards.
There is a good thing. I mean, he and I love food and wine, so it means he can do the food and I'll do the wine. And we're, Then we have lunch.
There you go, and that's lunch.
Which he's got to cook today. They are having a great time, but they, you know, I'm really sorry that Fergus isn't here, but yeah. As I said, lunch and the customers comes first.
That's true, that's true. So for those of you who aren't familiar with nose-to-tail cooking, or the whole beast, I urge you to take a look at that. If you get to London, certainly check out St. John Hotel and the other St. John,
But September.
September, in September.
I don't want this pressure. We're worried about this. when you were open...
Well, I just also wanted to mention that The Whole Beast, Nose to Tail Eating, was the first book and the one that just, you know, skyrocketed to cult status. And it has been followed up. In 2007, Fergus published Beyond Nose to Tail Eating, and that has some more wonderfully delicious recipes in it. And I, not that I need to remind people, but I just want to add that, yes, this was considered... rough around the edges cooking. It was adventurous cooking, but it is wonderfully delicious. I mean, Fergus is an amazing chef, and it's really wonderful tasting food, not a gimmick.
I'd say it's that thing when he's talking, talking about the textures of all offal, you know, and the pink and plastic stuff, which we all rail on about, is, you know, if you, you know, it's a supermarket, it's a global bit like cars, I guess. And they don't even, the people don't know what's in them. That's really right. In that pink plastic. They never probably don't know what a cow is. Yeah. You know, that's just a bouncy thing I saw when I last watched children's TV or something. You know, and there is an idea that there should be some responsibility. Does that make sense?
Yes, it is. Sustainable eating, sustainable cooking, sustainable responsibility to the land, to the animals. You're right in there. Well, thank you so much for joining me on today's show. And I want to thank our sponsor, The Barter House. And as always, our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Nat Wiener. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past on Heritage Radio Network.